Track 11. To downsize or not to downsize? That is a question many people face in later years. Dr. John Carrow shares his personal thoughts on a topic which tests many families.
I must be a senior citizen. I found this out recently when I had an appointment at our local hospital and found myself in the department for the elderly. I was reminded that many years ago, as a junior houseman at the same hospital, I looked after a geriatric ward, admitting all patients over 65. I was horrified to realise that I passed that landmark 15 years ago. What problems does being old present? That depends on so many imponderables, such as one's state of mind, economic position, marital and family situation, and, very importantly, health. Many of us oldies are lucky enough to be living in houses that we've grown to love, but are often far too big for our current requirements. Some have gardens that are too large to keep spick and span without considerable help. If changes of circumstances occur, a large alteration in health, or worse still, the death of a spouse, things might change quickly and rehousing may become critical. Our children, one in particular, constantly go on at us, regularly saying that we should downsize now while we can do it at our leisure and not rely on crisis management. Talking to some friends, much the same age as my wife and me, they said their children were putting them under exactly the same pressure, which they're finding hard to deal with. The reasons the children give for such a move sound very sensible, but ignore many problems that we can see arising. For instance, it's suggested that we live much nearer to one of them so they could help man the pumps if necessary. But how do we decide which child we should lumber with this duty? Would the other child feel less important? Might the one we selected to live nearby feel unable to move in the future, thinking that we were their responsibility? In fact, it might be considered that they should be responsible, as the move was suggested by them. But this inability to move might spoil their work prospects if they couldn't make a move prompted by a promotion or other change in employment. Would the novelty of having elderly parents just around the corner soon wear off and change into an unwanted burden? We have explained that our friends, those of them that are still lucky enough to be alive, would be left behind. The children's response is that we would easily make new ones. They forget the saying, like an oak tree, it takes a long time to grow an old friend. If my wife and I played bridge, golf, or took part in other group activity, new friendships might develop. But we do none of these things. In fact, we joined a local arts society for monthly lectures, but with one or two exceptions, in 5 years, none of the 100 or so other members ever spoke to us. Friendship often runs very deep. We have three friends, now widows or widowers, that we've supported since they lost their spouses with regular phone calls. That could continue from a distance, but the visits to them and invitations for coffee or afternoon tea would be lost. We don't owe these bereaved people this support, but as friends, feel it's part of our social responsibility, and we'd feel we were letting them down if we moved away. We love our house. We have enough space that we have room to be ourselves and do our own thing if we wish without impinging on the other. But we don't live separate lives. In fact, when answering one question as part of a COVID-19 survey, which asked how many hours a day we spent together, including sleeping, our response was 24 hours. We were embarrassed by this answer, as if it might be seen that we were tied together by our apron strings. Remembering that I spent a little while in the workshop every day, we changed our answer to 20 hours in the next survey. The kitchen is big enough to house my wife's joy, an arga, not very environmentally friendly, and a table that will seat four that we use for meals most of the time. The sitting room is big enough to seat our family and still have enough room for my wife's grand piano. There are enough bedrooms to accommodate our family and grandchildren. We have an outside workshop that I can make a mess in and as much noise as I like, and a garage for two cars, but mainly used to house lawnmowers and other bits and pieces. We have spent nearly 50 years changing our house to suit us and have added to it with bricks and mortar, sweat and tears, and considerable amounts of cash. It is now part of us, and we of it. All in all, we are very lucky. Our garden has a similar but very different history. It started out as part of a flat, treeless and uninteresting field. We were lucky enough to have bought a pair of derelict farm cottages in an old farm paddock. The only greenery, apart from grass and thistles, was the hedge where the garden bordered the road. The grass was cleaned up, and over the years, the many trees we planted early have grown to maturity. We were very surprised how quickly trees actually grow, and we now have a little wood. Flower borders and various walls and additional hedges have broken up the flatness. The garden, rather than being just a large patch of grass, is now a proper garden, including a small orchard, shared with a few rescue chickens, a small vegetable patch, and a greenhouse. We would hate to leave a home that we think of as heaven. Where would we go? What sort of house would we look for? Thinking the children might have a point, we decided to draw up a list of what we would look for in a house in which we might be happy. Fortunately, many of our requirements were shared between us, but there were some significant areas that we disagreed on. A considerable number of compromises would be needed. Of course, if we waited for one of us to die, the survivor could then buy a house that fulfilled their particular criteria without any compromises. That is, if such a house existed. If we did move, what could we take? And what would we have to leave behind? We bought a lovely Victorian brass door knocker, and our back door bell is a Victorian bell on a spring operated by wires from the servants' quarters of a grand house. Many of our doors have beautiful brass furniture collected over years. Would the new owners allow us to go round the house with a screwdriver just before we vacated it? Would it be feasible to move my wife's beloved Arga? Luckily, these are all hypothetical questions at the moment. Where would we move to? We've got used to our local shops and services, how to get there, and the best places to park. We know our way around the local large town, in our case the beautiful city of Norwich, and the best ways to get there, and again park if we've not used public transport. We like our local doctors and the working of their surgery, an old-fashioned general practice. Compared with what we hear of many others, ours is absolutely great. The local hospital is also well known to us. Move away and all this would vanish, and a whole new way of living would have to be learned. As we are often entreated to, using dreadful English, shop local, perhaps that is what we should do, and stay local. What would we move to? A house or a bungalow? Would single-storey living be more sensible as we age? Or should we accept that if a house was chosen, and our preference would be for a house, a stairlift might be required at some time in the future, or worse still, another move? We have no very close neighbours and like our quiet isolation, but if we needed to be near a bus route, this would not be possible. We hear stories of both good neighbours and those from hell. How would you know which until you started living there? Our cat is great company, and living very close to a road would not be ideal. So we need a house or a bungalow near public transport, detached, with no very near neighbours, but in a quiet location, and with a garden big enough for flower and vegetable growing, and a greenhouse, but not too big to look after. It would need either outbuildings to convert to a workshop, or the possibility of building a new one. Three bedrooms would be ideal. It would be nice if the house was old, but it mustn't be thatched, as my wife has been in two house fires and would dread the possibility of another. It should be on the edge of a village, with a shop that was not about to close. Looking online at various house sale sites revealed that what we would be looking for in the area we like is very rare indeed. In fact, over the last few years of looking, none has fitted these criteria. On top of all this, we are fearful of the current complexities and uncertainties of buying and selling properties, and feel these anxieties might be put off for now. The answer may be, like the ostrich with its head in the sand, to ignore the children, do nothing, stay where we are, keep our fingers crossed, and if disaster were to occur, fall back on crisis management. I wonder how many of our elderly friends feel the same.